Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Welcome to Vega's World. It's time to party. I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega. Thank you all for tuning in. Predator Badlands has come out, and I'm going to give you my review on the film. But before we dive into that, we got to talk a little movie news that's come out. Some fun stuff on the way. Pre-planned, all that fun stuff. Let's just dive into it, shall we? One of the big headlines for the week is the fact that Rachel Weisz and Brendan Fraser are in talks to return for a Mummy 4 from Universal Pictures. The third film, I forgot the name of it, but that came out, I think, mid-2000s. Rachel Weisz was not in the film because she had just had a baby. The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor, it also starred Jet Li. It came out in 2008. Excuse me. I thought it was early 2000s. 2008, a couple of years after The Mummy Returns, was starring The Rock as the Scorpion King in his big movie debut. But yeah, it's pretty cool. They're coming back for a fourth film, the third for the two of them. I enjoyed the first film. You know, it had that combination of horror and like that Indiana Jones vibe. They had great on-screen chemistry together. You know, I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully, it it lives up to the first two films in the franchise. It's funny that they're going back to that when, like, they've released a reboot starring Tom Cruise in 2017 that was supposed to be a part of the Dark Universe, and that fell flat. So, you know, it could be fun, you know. It'll be interesting to see how they play off that, because, I mean, you know, Brendan Fraser is a lot older, but, you know, he's had a career resurgence since The Whale has come out, and good for him. You know, can't wait to see it. They had great on-screen chemistry, and it'll be fun to see them back together in a new adventure. Keeping in this talk of, you know, old film franchises with new sequels coming out, it has been announced during the Warner Brothers Discovery quarterly earnings call, David Zaslav has announced they have greenlit a new Gremlins film. Steven Spielberg is back on board as the executive producer through his company, Amblin Entertainment. The original writer, Chris Columbus, is also set to return as the producer and director of the film. Zap Lipskovi, excuse me, I'm horrible with names, and Adam B. Stein, the duo behind Final Destination Bloodlines, are joining Chris Columbus to write this third film. And it'll be fun. I'll be curious to see how that works out, if it's going to be in the same vein as The New Batch, which came out in 1990. It was a satire of the first film and was more comedy than horror. And the first one, it had a bit of funny moments in it, but I think that was more straight up horror from what I can remember. It's been a long time since I watched the original Gremlins movie. And, you know, hey, it'll be cool to see. This is supposed to come out in 2027. They had a bit of a test for this, if the Gremlins were viable in the current day with the animated series Secret of the Mogwai that came out in 2023 and it aired on Max. See, I didn't even know that. I might have to go check that out just to see. And that could be fun. Maybe we'll see what the future holds for that. Another fun news for me personally, because I am a big fan of her And if you disagree with me about how good of an actress she is, I will fight you to the death. Okay, maybe not to the death, but you know, I will give you a stern tongue lashing, maybe a punch to the face. I don't know. Just don't test me. How about that? Just don't test me on this. Anyway, before I, you know, keep rambling on and making vague threats, Tatiana Maslany and Marwan Kenzari are set to star in a Berlin set romantic comedy called Any Other Night. It is directed by the Dutch filmmaker Michael Ten Horn with a script by Patrick Whistler. It is the first North American feature by Ten Horn. You know, he's a Dutch filmmaker. And the film premise is as follows. It takes place over a night over a crippling transit strike in Berlin. Two strangers are thrown together as their lives are falling apart. Sam, played by Kenzari, is a flailing cab driver struggling to make it all work. Maggie, played by Tatiana Maslany, is freshly dumped, but after loading all her worldly possessions in the back of Sam's decaying cab van, what should be a simple fare turns into a wild late-night odyssey. And off that alone, I'm interested. You know, Tatiana Maslany is a fantastic actress. Love her in Orphan Black. Her co-star has been in Guy Ritchie's version of Aladdin as Jafar. He was in The Old Guard opposite of Charlize Theron in Netflix. He was also in Black Adam. Could be a fun film. I'm up to watch almost anything with Tatiana Maslany, though I did not see The Monkey, and I don't know if I'm going to see The Keeper, which is written and directed by the Long Legs writer-director Osgood Perkins. You know, I can deal with a lot of things, but horror is not necessarily my bag. But if you want, you know, your horror fill, if you're a horror fan, go listen to Half Dead, by Caden Green, my co-host in my Vegas world endeavors, as well as my stablemate, tag team partner, if you will, in the funeral party in professional wrestling. I don't know why I said it like that, but whatever. Just roll with it. That'll be a lot of fun, so I'm looking forward to that. And Variety had an exclusive on that if you want to dive more into that. But moving on into comic book news, Rob Liefeld's Youngblood series sold pretty well on the distributor level, and in its second reprinting, called what they're calling the Treasury Edition, has also sold out. And I gotta be honest, man, I am puzzled by this news. I also wonder how many copies exactly have been printed. Exactly, to, you know. I mean, I know it's a sellout, but like, how many of them are really were out there, really? Because, you know, from what I know of Rob Liefeld in the comic book world, he's a bit of a punching bag to a lot of people. You know, he can't draw feet. His art, he makes the muscles overly exaggerated. You can go Google his image of Captain America for a cover of like some Avenger story, and how like the like his chest is protruding so far out that like I don't know, like is he like suffering from like a dozen tumors or something? Like what is going on? You know, and to be honest, Youngblood is just a haphazard ripoff of the X-Men. You know, the group that he wrote for when he worked at Marvel before splintering off to start Image. But at the same time, you know, more power to him that this is happening. Kudos to him. And it's cool that he's, you know, back working with Image Comics, you know, after his acrimonious departure from the comic book distributor. I don't even know if you can call it. I mean, it's a comic book company, but, like, it's more of a label than it is, like, a true company, because each individual its own, you know, create our own operated books, and, you know, none of the people who own Image own necessarily anybody else's creations on there. I don't know. It's very fascinating. There's a whole documentary about the Image itself called The Image Revolution. It's a really good documentary. Go check that out. But yeah, I don't know, man. It's just really interesting to me that this is selling so well, given how, you know, it's been decades since there's been a Youngblood comic. And, like, you know, even then, like, you know, it was always mired in delays and whatnot. But, hey, good for old Robbie boy. Proud of you. You know, I guess. but keeping in the comic book vein, Kevin Smith, who has written for the Green Arrow and Batman, is returning to the View Askew universe with a volume 3 of The Quick Stops. And this story will be centered, it's going to be a 4-part miniseries. The story is called Requiem, and it will center around Jay and Silent Bob, where they steal Buddy Christ, and they have a plan, but not necessarily a good one, and they have the idea to summon the Angel of Death for their, you know, scheme. And it would also see the Metatron, who on screen in Dogma was played by the late, great Alan Rickman. He will be a part of this story. You know, I might pick it up when it's in the trade form. The first issue came out during Halloween weekend. And it's very interesting, you know, the whole, you know, View Askew universe. For those of you who might be too young to remember or even know what the hell I'm talking about, Kevin Smith had this little shared universe called the View Askew universe. Every single character he had in movies from, like, Clerks all the way up until Clerks 3, you know, Dogma and all those, and Chasing Amy, Mallrats, were all in the same little universe, and they referenced each other. It's the MCU before the MCU, when you really think about it. It's the first shared movie universe, if you want to get super technical, and that's so funny to think about in that way, because, like, it's stoner comedies before Kevin Smith became a stoner. That's a whole other can of worms if you really want to get into it, which is funny to think about for Kevin Smith. But nonetheless, I'm rambling on. But you know, hey, that's gonna be interesting to see. You know, it's stories written by Kevin Smith with art by Mark Rahill and lettering by Andrew Thomas. I might pick it up when it's fully, you know, collected in the trades. Kevin Smith, I know for all his misgivings as a director, he's a pretty solid writer. You know, he had a pretty acclaimed run on the Green Arrow as well as the Green Hornet, and he also wrote a Batman storyline, one that a lot of people were upset about because he wrote in his version that Batman, during the course of year one, like when he was, you know, dealing with the cops, he pissed his pants, and that pissed off a lot of people. That's just funny saying out loud, you know, but that sounds pretty fun. So if you're a big Kevin Smith fan, be sure to be on the lookout for that. And in keeping in the comic book world, it has been announced that Prime is giving us yet another Boys spinoff. Once Gen V is done, we are going to go back to the 1950s in a series called Vought Rising. Will have Jensen Ackles returning as Soldier Boy. You know, he was a season 3 standout, and I think the showrunner was the showrunner for Supernatural, so that's, you know, that's the reason a lot of the people from Supernatural have showed up in, you know, Boys related television shows. This Boys prequel will also see the return of Aya Cash as the neo-Nazi Stormfront. I've yet to see Gen V. I hear it's really good and all that, but hey, that's pretty cool that they're continuing on with this. You know, if companies are known for anything, is they will milk a franchise. Excuse me, I don't mean to burp on audio here. How unprofessional! But if companies are known for anything, it's they will milk a franchise to death. I mean, the Terminator franchise has been beaten to a dead horse, revived and beaten to death again. So, you know, they're going to run the Boys in the ground. AMC ran The Walking Dead in the ground. So, you know, Prime is definitely going to milk the Boys for all it's worth. And to that, I will also say that the Boys, the television series is light years better than the comic book. You know, the comic book was more shock and awe than nuance and, you know, satire and critic, and, you know, a critique on, you know, superhero comics as well as superhero movies and all that. It's got a more subtlety to it and a lot more, thought put into it, I'll say, instead of just being shock and awe. So this is one of the rare instances to me where the adaption is better than its source material. Also in this Vought Rising, I'm skimming this article, but there's also going to be another spinoff in the Boys universe with this series taking place in Mexico, starring Diego Luna and Gael Garcia Bernal. And it's going to be, I guess, Vought in Mexico. Yeah. So the pilot of The Boys Mexico is being developed right now. This is what they're saying about the show. It's very cool. I mean, who knows? Obviously, you never know, but I can say that the world itself meets the standard of all of our spinoffs. It's our world, but a totally different tone, and it's super fun. Gail and Diego are executive producers, which is amazing. They're really engaged with it, so the short answer is we'll see, but I think the script is good, said showrunner Eric Kirpke. I can't say your name. Sorry, sir. But yeah, there's going to be a Mexican spinoff. But in keeping with that they're, you know, a company will bleed dry a franchise. Like I said, The Walking Dead was beaten into the ground with like the infinite number of spinoff series that they had. And the Gen V is going to get another season. I forgot what season they're on now. I think season 3, whatever. They're season 2 now, so I guess we're going to get a third season. But yeah, more from, if you like The Boys, you're going to get more of it, and I'm sure you will love it. I like the main show, The Boys. I've yet to watch Gen V, so I may have to start getting on that so I can, you know, keep up and maybe review it if possible. Moving on, though, let's continue on, shall we? The teaser trailer for Michael, the Michael Jackson biopic from Lionsgate. Antoine Fuqua is the director and has producers, the people from Bohemian Rhapsody. From what we see in the teaser trailer, Michael is prepping to record with Quincy Jones, and it, you know, intermixes clips from his life as a pop star as well as his early life with his family being part of the Jackson 5. And, you know, it's being prepped and he's, you know, in the midst of making Thriller. The person playing Michael, at least adult Michael, is Jafar Jackson, the nephew of Michael Jackson. And from what we saw in this teaser trailer, he definitely nails his uncle's voice. You know, if you close your eyes, you would think it's Michael himself talking. This is probably going to be more of a puff piece, so to speak. I don't know how deep they're going to dive into, you know, the controversies around Joe Jackson as well as Michael himself and his adult life. There has been a lot of rumors about the project, the latter of which Lionsgate has denied happening, being the representation of Jordan Chandler, one of the alleged victims of sexual abuse by Michael Jackson on screen, which they've said that was not in the film and not happened. It was also, they rescheduled the release from being 2025 to April 24, 2026, because the original cut was 4 hours long. I don't know who, I mean, I know there's a lot of diehard Michael Jackson fans out there, but I don't know who would want to sit through a 4-hour freaking movie, especially just, I mean, come on, man. That's a miniseries at that point. Just give me like a whatever. I mean, but anyway, nonetheless, could be interesting, you know. My personal beliefs about, you know, the man Michael Jackson is neither here nor there. We could talk about that to like for hours on end if you really want to. And not that I'm saying, that every movie and every, biopic needs to hammer home the fact that, yes, he led a peculiar life with some questionable decisions. I don't know, man. I mean, it's part of his life, but I don't know. I'm not saying every biopic needs to have, like, the seedy dark side of a person's life. I mean, even Bohemian Rhapsody, for as good as it was, didn't necessarily accurately portray the life of Freddie Mercury. They made the legendary concert, Live Aid's concert. I forgot the name of it, but I think it's the Live Aid. But yeah, the Live Aid concert made it seem like he did it right after his diagnosis of AIDS, which was not the case. He didn't even know he was, the diagnosis came out like 2 years after that concert. So like, whatever. This movie, it's going to be interesting. But again, it's interesting the fact that Antoine Fuqua is the director of this because, it's the director of Training Day. Which is gritty realism in a sense. So, I mean, maybe he's the perfect choice if they're going to dive into, more of the unsavory aspects and unfortunate aspects of his life, of Michael Jackson's life. Well, that's neither here nor there. But yeah, if you're a fan of Michael Jackson, yeah, that's it for you. And, again, we could talk all day long about his peculiar lifestyle and choices and what, theories on what is real and what's fiction or if he is what they claimed he was and all that stuff. But there's no denying, though, that Michael Jackson as an entertainer is second to none. I mean, I don't think there's anybody who's replicated his success or even his star power. Like, that man had people like passing out and freaking out. Like, the man knew how to perform. And, it remains to be seen, though, Jafar Jackson's got the voice down, if how well of an actor he is. So, I guess if you're a fan, be on the lookout for that. But in more fun movie news, the sequel to Godzilla Minus One has been announced during Godzilla Day in Tokyo's Godzilla Fest in 2025. The Minus One director, Takashi Yamazaki, has announced that he will helm Godzilla Minus Zero, which would be the sequel to Minus One. Minus One is a phenomenal film, and I have no doubt that, Minus Zero will definitely live up to it. I mean, that film, Minus One, was really, really, really well done. I mean, with a fraction of a budget than most, Godzilla films, but made in America. I think it was like $1 million budget, which was wild to think about with how tremendous the CGI for the monster himself was. But I'm looking forward to it. There's no plot details that have been released. They gave us a teaser image, or at least the logo image for Minus Zero. And I'm looking forward to it, man. It's going to be quite fun. But let's dive into the review of Predator Badlands. As you may know, Dan Trachtenberg was the director of Prey, and he's been more or less the shepherd, the major creative force behind, Prey, Predator, Killer of Killers, and as well as this film. And this film will mark the first time that a Predator is the protagonist of a Predator film, Predator 1, 2, Predators. The Predator is the antagonist, a force to be reckoned with by a human element. But this time, we are going to be in the point of view of a Yautja. And I think that's another thing. Well, I'm going to sidebar real quick. I think it's awesome that we have finally, at least in the movies, have used the Yautja name. The Yautja name has been in comic books and in novels. I've owned a couple of Predator novels, and it's really cool that we've finally, you know, at least in theatrical releases, we've gotten a name for this race of alien hunters, you know, because Predator, I mean, it's while it's a cool title, it definitely lent itself to, you know, what the first film with Arnold Schwarzenegger meant and what that represented. It's cool that we're getting that, and we're getting a little bit more of the lore of the Predators that have been hinted at in novels, comic books, and video games. And we're getting more of that in the movie releases, because I'm a big sucker for lore, especially like fun lore like this. And I'm a big Predator fan. But to talk about this, Deck is a runt of his clan. We also get to see the homeworld, which is also pretty cool, because like it's called Yautja Prime, and on this planet, it goes as you would expect. Like, everybody's a hunter, even like the smaller animal. It's like, you know, we see in the opening scene, you see a glimpse of like the food chain, little animal gets eaten by a bigger animal, which gets eaten by an even bigger animal. It's a dog eat dog cutthroat planet. And the Yautja themselves are no exception. You know, Deck is considered the runt of his clan. And, he's got to fight. He's fighting his brother, who was sent by their father to kill him. And this is not a spoiler. This was a little aspect of the film that was released in a short teaser clip for the film. Deck, he's the smallest one of his clan. He's considered the weakest one, and he sets out to acquire a prey that is considered unkillable and an apex predator in its own right on a lethal planet called Jenna. And he has to hunt what they call the Kalisk. Again, it's an apex predator, an unkillable thing that even Deck's father fears and wants no part of. And he goes off to this planet to acquire this unkillable beast. And this film is fun. It's PG-13, which can be deceiving because, you know, most Predator films are rated R, AVP. However, the first AVP film was rated PG-13, so you didn't get a whole lot of blood and gore necessarily. And this film has got a lot of maiming, as a Predator would do. But the kicker in this is that because there are no humans in this film, and the maiming and all the blood and gore that you see is of synthetics. You know, they're bringing in, you know, the synthetics from the Alien franchise, that were made by the Weyland-Yutani Corporation, as seen in Alien Earth. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, there's no humans in this film, just the synthetics. And Elle Fanning plays dual roles as Tessa and Thea. Thea is a damaged synth that more or less partners up with Deck on his journey to kill the Kalisk. And I gotta say, I love the dynamic between the two. You know, Thea is a nonstop chatterbox, and she's very playful in her demeanor and very funny. And Deck is none of those things. Deck is all business. Deck doesn't even want anything to do with her. He just sees her as a tool. And that's what she even pulls, like, you know, manipulation tactics. He's like, hey, I don't think of me as like a partner, because, you know, the whole thing is Yautja hunt alone and teamwork is a sign of weakness, which I don't know. I don't necessarily believe that, because we've seen in other Predator films that the Predators work together in a sense, but maybe that's different clans, you know, different clans, different ideology. But overall, you know, one of the big things is, you know, Predators hunt alone or Yautja hunt alone. There's no weakness. Weakness is empathy is a sign of weakness, and we don't need none of that. But anyway, you know, Thea convinces Deck that they need to work together in order to get the Kalisk, because she knows where to find it. And I love that dynamic. And I love that the Predator does not speak in English. You know, I mean, we've only heard it communicate in clicks or mimic, you know, speech, and doesn't necessarily seem to understand it, but it mimics, you know, I mean, in the first film, or no, the second film, they utter the phrase motherfucker, but, you know, but they speak their own language in this film. That's really cool. And they keep to that, you know. Elle Fanning's character, Thea, does universal language, which we understand as English, but she's communicating to Deck in the Yautja language. That was pretty cool. I like that. I like that aspect of it. Because I was wondering how they were going to pull it off with, if like it was going to be more or less a silent film with all the Deck character speaking in clicks, as we've heard before in Predator movies. But the fact that we get a full-blown language is pretty neat. And the action in this film is, I mean, in the opening 3 minutes, we get a fight between Quay and Deck. And, you know, this before he gets his birthright or passage to go on a hunt in order to earn his cloak. Because in this film, they explain that in Yautja culture that younglings are, you know, young predators don't get the fancy technology that the older predators get after they've, you know, established and had successful hunts. You gotta earn that right to get your cloak and everything, and earn your right to be a full-blooded Yautja. Because you're not seen as a Yautja until you've had a successful hunt. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, overall the action is great. And like I said before, when I saw the teaser trailer, I felt it was like a demented lone wolf and cub, and it kind of is, but I guess more or less it's reluctant partners, so to speak. And, you know, this film, surprisingly, is about family in a sense, and chosen family, and how you may not necessarily come from the same place and be of the same species, how you could find each other and bond. That's kind of something that was interesting and fascinating to consider in a Predator film, and how, you know, a predator deals with the fact that it's on the outskirts of its race and people, and how it's got to deal with this conflicting ideology in a sense, or, you know, having to come into grips with not being a part of it in a sense, and having wanting to earn that right and following the, you know, teachings of his father as well as its clan, and yet still operating in this different way in order to get his goal achieved. It's a really well done film. You know, Dan Trachtenberg is a phenomenal director. Patrick Eisen is the writer of this film, and it's pretty good. I'll say it's fantastic. I do like the incorporation of the alien lore with you know, the Sense, the Weyland-Yutani Corporation being a part of it. I mean, they've been a part necessarily since Predator 2, where they had like the xenomorph skull in the ship, and with the AVP films. But it's cool that, I mean, they also teased it in Killers 2 that like they're further cementing the connected universe between the Alien and Predator films, but this further solidifies it even more so with a official Predator film, and not just like it's a side franchise. So that's pretty cool. I like that. I like the, you know, the difference in Tessa, in Thea, and how Tessa is more emotionless and robotic in her demeanor, well, as Thea has more, you know, more human-like quality about her and how she handles situations. I'm trying to be spoiler-free because it just came out, and like I saw it like a preview screening of it. I'm recording this on a Thursday. The movie technically comes out at the time of this release on November 7th. But yeah, and like you get like the Predator still, while showing different emotions, is for sure a badass in his own way. But, you know, he's more of an underdog. He's got to fight and scratch and claw a little more to get his kills and to get his hunt to a success. And, you know, I know it's a combination of CGI and practical effects with like the Predator, you know, makeup and the suit. And it was really unique and really cool how they showed how they were able to capture a lot of emotion in the Predator's face. I mean, you know, in the 80s, you know, the mechanical work and all that, it was what it was. It was still good for its time, but, you know, you didn't get a whole lot of articulation as you can now. And the range of emotions that they show Deck, even when he's not speaking, and like how he conveys what he's feeling, was phenomenal. They did a really, really great job of that. And it made me invested. It made you sympathize with Deck, even though he's not necessarily a sympathetic character, so to speak. Because, I mean, the Yautja are a brutal race of aliens. They're, you know, the killer of killers, apex hunters. They pride themselves on being apex hunters. So, you know, but we get a little bit of that. We get the peak into their you know, culture and world. And it's even funny, you know, the one scene that they did have with like Thea, like asking a whole lot of questions, like, hey, are the do you digest with the mandibles on the outside or the inside? Like, you know, asking all these questions about that, about how functionally they work as, you know, a race, I guess, and how they work like that, and how she's slightly familiar with their customs of their people, and how she uses that to her benefit. It's also interesting to hear Dan Trachtenberg. I was reading a couple articles after I got home from the movie of how there was also the idea of bringing Nari from Prey into this film as a team up for the Predator in this film, or the idea of, you know, Deck fighting Nazis in World War II, but Dan Trachtenberg decided he wanted a more, you know, a different approach where there was literally no humans in the film and just robots and the Predator and dealing with like an outside force and another different alien force. And I gotta say, you know, hey, you made the right choice. I'll make even the bolder claim, and I will say that Predator Badlands, if I was going to rank, you know, the movies in the franchise, it would go Predator, Predator Badlands, Predators, Predator 2, Predator Killer of Killers, and then, you know, AVP, and then AVP Requiem, if I was going to categorize that within Predators being, or the Predator being dead last. I was going to rank it, but I think, yeah, I think this is my, if I was going to rank them, this would probably be my second favorite film in the entire movie franchise. That's probably a big claim because it just came out, and, you know, the Predators, that was written by Robert Rodriguez, and Predator 2, and Killer of Killers, you know, might be some other people's favorites. But yeah, no, I think this might be my second favorite film in the whole franchise, because Predator, you can't beat Predator, man. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's also a satire on the uber macho masculinity of the 80s and the 80s action film, and how it strips that away, you know, and that subtext in the film. But yeah, no, this was a solid, solid film. The action is good. The story is top notch, and it expands the lore enough, and, you know, again, it adds elements that we've seen in novels, comic books, and such. So I'm happy about that, and it further cements that Aliens and Predator is a shared universe. Love that for the film, and I can't wait to see. And they leave it on a good on a on a fun little cliffhanger that if they decided to like continue on with this storyline instead of being a one-off, that they could, and it could also intersect with, you know, the killer of killers. It could, you know, it could lend itself to that, or it even could, you know, help blend Prey and this movie together. I don't know. It's a lot. The possibilities are endless. And I appreciated that. Also, as fun little fact, the person who created the Na'vi language in Avatar is the guy who created the Yautja language for this film, which was really cool. Again, then like the term Yautja was first used in the novel Aliens vs. Predator Prey, written by S.D. Perry and Steve Perry. So that's pretty cool. That's a little fun little history for you. And another little fun little tidbit, Deck, played by Demetrius Schuster Kalamangi. I'm sorry, sir. He is from New Zealand. He's a New Zealand actor, and he's of Samoan Tongan heritage. So that's a hard ass last name to try and say. But he's a stunt performer, and like this is his first. I mean, technically, this is his first, like, I guess, serious or leading role in a sense, because like he's a stunt actor, and you know, hey, he does a hell of a job, and the fact that he had to learn this language specifically for this role is pretty awesome. Studio Gillis, who did the creature work for Deck, again, top notch. This studio was founded by Stan Winston, you know, who's a famed effects artist, makeup artist. So that's also pretty cool. And yeah, man, it's a phenomenal film. I can't wait to see more. Dan Trachtenberg is, you know, kudos to him for taking this franchise, the Predator franchise, and breathing new life and interest into it. Because Prey was phenomenal. I can't wait for Prey 2. Killers were really good, and how it, you know, brought back Dutch and Danny Glover's character Hannigan from the second film. I can't wait to see how that all ties together. And yeah, no, I just can't speak enough higher praise about it. And I just love the themes of this film and how we also got to see a Yautja succeed. I mean, it was a foregone conclusion, I feel, when they were made, it was going to be set from the Predator's perspective. I mean, most Predator films, they lose. So it's like, it's cool to be on the other side of it and actually them live up to being, you know, the apex Predators in the galaxy, and how they're, you know, successful hunters and not just fodder for human ingenuity and resources. So that's fun. Go check it out. Can't speak any more praise about it. It's a fun film. I may get more spoilery in the future to come, but yeah, no, I loved this film, and it was a lot of fun. And a little bit of final piece of news. There's been hints that Moon Knight, although hasn't been announced for a sequel, might be showing up soon. He could be. It's been said by, like, you know, the showrunner that he might show up. He's definitely going to show up in an MCU project that's not his own. And, I mean, that could be Doomsday. That'd be really cool. I mean, Oscar Isaac could also show up as Apocalypse, because he was Apocalypse in the Fox franchise. And as far as I'm aware, that their Doomsday is using a lot of the Fox era X-Men actors. So he could show up as that. But, you know, it could be cool to see Moon Knight back. But they haven't written off the fact that Moon Knight might get a second season. And during the time of the first season, there was, you know, a lot of those shows were supposed to be just a entry point for those characters into the MCU before they were launched off into different projects and show up in there. And, you know, the MCU, Marvel has changed the way they've done TV shows since then. So, like, they might just be their own standalone. Who knows? But It'll be interesting to see. I would love to see more of the character. I loved Moon Knight when it came out, and you know, Oscar Isaac is a phenomenal actor, and the character itself is interesting. You know, it's different split personalities, like being, you know, DID, and just the way the Moon Knight entity itself works. It's a lot of fun. But, hopefully we get, you know, they teased it. Hopefully we get more of him. He might show up in Doomsday. But I would love to see a second season of Moon Knight for sure. So that's a little fun aside. Closing out the show, there is some upcoming sci-fi franchises or upcoming sci-fi TV shows based off of novels that Screen Rant has talked about that I would like to share and give my thoughts on as well. Again, this article was written by Screen Rant, and one of the first novels or book series on the list was Consider Phelbus, written by Ian M. Banks. It is going to be a Prime Video production. It's based off the Culture series written by Ian Banks. It centers around a post-scarcity utopian society that fights for its rights to exist in an intergalactic war against the Idrin Empire, a society determined to expand throughout the entire galaxy. The show will start with the book Consider Phelbus. So that could be fun. The new show has author Charles Yu signed on as a writer and executive producer. Yu's experience for writing sci-fi is a good sign that this show could, you know, be well done. There's going to be a series called The Future is Ours. It's by Netflix. Netflix Latin America announced that they are adapting Philip K. Dick's novel The World Jones Made into a miniseries called The Future is Ours. The book is a dystopian book set in 2047 after the ecological collapse leads to a draconian regime. The story follows a psychic preacher whose arrest makes him the figurehead of a revolution. The show is being made with support of Dick's daughter, Issa Dick Hatchett, and her production company, Electric Shepherd Productions. The production company has been the source of many Philip K. Dick adaptions, such as The Man in the High Castle and Electric Dreams. I think I saw watch Electric Dreams. Electric Dreams is really good. So that bodes well for, you know, how this show could go. The creative team behind The Future is Ours includes many of the same people who are responsible for the 2024 Netflix adaptation of The 100 Years of Solitude. And after seeing how they brought that prolific novel to life, it sounds like it's going to be pretty safe to say that will be a well-crafted show. Another sci-fi adaption called The Testaments. It's a sequel to The Handmaid's Tale. It's going to be, it's going to be done by Hulu. It's going to be interesting considering, like, you know, Handmaid's Tale is over and that was done really well. So, you know, the fact that it's getting a sequel, so to speak, is pretty interesting. It's going to be the same creative team who was behind that series going to be a part of this. And so it's going to maintain the, you know, visual style and integrity that show had. Emmy winning actor Ann Dodd is returning as Aunt Lydia. Okay, so, you know, that's going to be really interesting. And she will be one of the three leads, along with Lucy Halliday as Daisy and Chase Infinity as Agnes / Hannah. Also getting a series or an adaption will be Blade Runner 2099. It's based off of Philip K. Dick's novel To Androids Dream of Electric Sheep. And, It didn't do that well in the box office. Neither did the sequel that came out nearly 40 years after the fact. But I love the Blade Runner franchise. I love the movies. There was an anime too called Black Lotus. I've yet to see that, but I heard that was really good too. I got to get on that. But I'm stoked for another film. But there are no details about the film or what's the premise is going to be. But the cast, though, the cast for this film intrigues me a whole hell of a lot. Michelle Yeoh from Everything, Everywhere at Once and Wicked, she's going to be in it. Euphoria's Hunter Schafer is also going to be in this, so that bodes well. Of course, Scott Free Productions, the production company owned by Ridley Scott, will be a part of it. Ridley Scott himself will be a producer. Hopefully he doesn't step into the director's chair. I know he directed the first film, and he's, the big driving force behind the stylistic, the visual style of the film and the sets and all that. But I don't want him in the director's chair. I want somebody else to do it, because Ridley, you're old, man. You're over the hill. Your best years are behind you. Go away. But as long as he stays as a producer, I guess it should be fine. Apple TV is getting Necromancer. It's the book series by William Gibson. As the Screen Rant article says, Necromancer laid the foundation for virtually every book, movie, and video game in the cyberpunk sci-fi subgenre. Even if it didn't create the term or genre, it's the catalyst of one. We can thank this book for such things as Matrix and Cyberpunk 2077. The story is set in the dystopian future dominated by unfettered corporations and technology. A disabled former computer hacker named Case teams up with a cybernetically modified mercenary named Molly to complete a heist on behalf of an ex-military agent named Artemage. The story explores wealth, inequality, capitalism, AI, cybernetics, and the meaning of being human and consciousness. Similar, I guess, in a sense, to Blade Runner. But also, dealing with the cyberpunk, motifs, if you will. And if it's, it sounds interesting. I don't have Apple TV, but I'll have to wait to see a trailer and such before I decide to fork out the money for Apple TV once again. And some of the big names that are on this is Callum Turner, who was on Masters of Air, Brianna Middleton, who was in Sharper, and Mark Strong, who was in The Kingsman, The Secret Service. Additionally, J.D. Dillard from Devotion and Graham Rowland from Dark Winds. They are serving as a showrunners. Could be fascinating. I am all for some cyberpunk. I love that aesthetic. Cyberpunk 2027 is a phenomenal game. I was playing that not too long ago. If you haven't played it, you should play it yourself. And, I might have to check out the Necromancer book, but it's in production right now. So that'll be cool. I can't wait for a teaser of that. And Sci-Fi and Prime, who adapted The Expanse, which is apparently heralded as one of the best modern sci-fi TV shows ever. And considering that show's success, they are decided to adapt The Captive War, the new sci-fi trilogy plus two novellas written by the duo of Daniel Abraham and Ty Frank, who is the pen name of writer James S.A. Corey. If you can't get, I'm paraphrasing from the Screen Rant novel, article, says, if we can't get the last three books of The Expanse, this is the next best option. The trilogy follows an enslaved human struggling to survive under the oppression of the Kharrix, an alien race. The premise is very different from Corey's previous series, but they share similar tones in the space opera styling of The Expanse. And apparently the interesting part of this is that the show will have the same team that were behind The Expanse. So, that's going to be well acted and well crafted director Breck Eisner and showrunner Naren Shankar. Writers Abraham and Frank will also be a part of it. So that'll be pretty cool. You know, The Expanse, I've saw the first couple of seasons and I loved it. I need to go back and finish it. So if that's any indication of how this could be, I'm looking forward to it. And like the cover art for The Captive's War is pretty wild, because like it looks like a like giant cricket with like frog people as its henchmen. I don't know, it looks really wild. And you know, if it's with the people behind The Expanse, I'm looking forward to that. So again, this is interesting stuff. This is just some things to look out forward to, because I'm a big sci-fi guy. I love my science fiction novels. Live sci-fi comics, like again, Blade Runner is one of my favorite movies of all time, despite what I said about Ridley Scott. So looking forward to those. And, you know, those blurbs and the people involved got me excited for some of those. And I'm looking forward to them. So I think that about covers everything I wanted to talk about this week. You know, go check out Predator Badlands if you get the chance. That also makes me want to pick up Predator's Eyes of the Demon. It's a book that came out a couple of years ago. It's a series of short stories by several different authors, and one centers around Dutch and what happens to him in the aftermath of the first film. So that was pretty fun. And I dig it, you know. I love that. So I'm going to dive back into that, and maybe I'll have to review it for the podcast at some point. I got a couple other books I need to read, too, mainly Predator. It's called Predator Stalking Shadows, and there's an omnibus book with Concrete Jungle, Cold War, and Big Game in it that I need to read. Also, there was an Alien vs. Predator series, two called The Rage War, that came out that I got the first two books. I need to get the third one and read that. But yeah, those are something to look forward to. But next week we'll be covering the Mighty Ducks franchise. We'll be discussing D2, the Mighty Ducks, where the Pee Wee hockey team, you know, goes global. And I will be joined by Caden Green and a special return of someone who hasn't been seen a while on the show. Can't wait for that. After that, we're going to go back to the 90s in our retro review, where we're going to discuss Heat, and I will share tidbits of Heat 2 in that discussion. I'm also going to finish Infernal Affairs. So after, in between D2 and D3, I will have a, you know, release about the third movie in the Infernal Affairs trilogy, and I will talk about the overall stories on that. So those are something to look forward to in the future, as well as a Running Man review. You can find the show Vegas World Pod on Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky. Go to Vegas World on YouTube. Like and subscribe. Watch the videos and be on the lookout for my upcoming Hidden Gem video about Drive from 1997. I can't get enough of that movie, as well as a Orphan Black teaser / retrospective, given that it has hit Netflix not too long ago. You can find me at the JC Vega on all the social media platforms. Go to ProWrestlingTees.com, get yourself a Vegas World t-shirt, support the show, support the brand, and support me by getting yourself a JC Vega t-shirt. One says punk rock, the other says rainbow dash. Good night and party on.